Folks, as I said there, this is a very special programme because this morning we're paying tribute to a man, I suppose you could say a legend that was in our midst, folks. And indeed, it's only right and proper, I suppose, that we remember the contribution that the late but great Jim Fitzgerald made to the station here and indeed to the community of East Cork and indeed West Waterford as well. Now, as I said, folks, at the outset of the programme, it's with great sadness that we all learned of the death of our friend Jim Fitzgerald from Clashmore. Now, to put it mildly, Jim, I suppose, was a character larger than life. And indeed, one of the many hats he wore, he was the first chairman of Yall Communications Limited. And of course, Jim was known the length and breadth of the country. The stories abound about Jim are absolutely legion. And this morning, we're all gathered to honour and to pay tribute to his memory. Of course, I'm joined by Michael T. Murphy, Paddy O'Brien, Seamus Murphy, Ollie Mack, and indeed Barty Murphy. Lads, thanks very much for coming in and indeed joining us this morning in this very, very special tribute to the late but great Jim Fitzgerald. I want to start with you, Michael T. Michael T, I want to start with you because, Michael T, as I said there at the outset, Jim Fitzgerald was one of our first chairman of Yall Communications.
He was indeed. My first connection with Jim, of course, was through my own business.
Yes.
And as he developed his own business with his two pubs and his disco at the Hilltop, I got to know him very well.
Yes.
And then I was very interested in the formation of Yall Local Radio, as we used to call it.
Yes.
And Jim came on board with us, and he was very enthusiastic about it. For me, Jim Fitzgerald, when he had a project in mind, he was fully focused on what he wanted to do, and he put in great energy and determination to succeed, and the rest is history. But Jim and I, we went to the various meetings and interviews. One in particular was with Dean Thornhill above in the Jory's Hotel in Cork, you remember?
Yes.
And at the time, Christy Cooney was on the panel, I think, the judgment panel.
That's right. So Christy was a member of the then IRTC at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was. And that was very successful. And we got a good wrinkle that we were going to get the licence. But anyway, Jim and I had to go to Dublin for this, your man, the guy with the shades, what's his name?
Stokes. Niall Stokes.
And we signed on. And to cut a long story short, we signed on, signed the contracts and got the permits and all that. So we had a bit of time to spare. So Jim brought me to the Dáil Éireann, and he walked in the back door of Dáil Éireann as if he was living there.
Yes.
Everybody seemed to know him.
Everybody knew him.
And eventually, of course, we got the tour of the Senate and the Dáil, of course, and then we wound up in the bar. And Jim and I were just at the corner of the bar, the counter, and who walked in? Only Ray Burke. He was
Minister of Communications, I think, at the time, wasn't he?
He was, yes. So Jim says to me, "Look at your man." I said, "What about him?" He says, "He was the so-and-so now," he said, "who blocked us and wouldn't give us the licence."
Oh, yes.
I says, "Leave it to me," I said.
Right.
So now, after a while, typical politician, of course, Ray Burke was, he made his way down to the two strangers, wanting to know who we were and what we were doing.
Yes.
So I told him, I said, "Well, Minister," I says, "we're here," I says, "we're just after signing the licence for Yall Radio."
Yes.
"Oh, I'm delighted for you," I says. "I'm sure you are. You were the very first fellow who blocked it for today."
"Why, Michael, man?"
Jim caught me by the arm. He says, "For so-and-so's sake, get out of here," he said, "before we get arrested." That's a happy memory I have for Jim. But as I said, he was very dedicated and full of energy and dedication what he wanted to do.
Mm.
He succeeded.
Yes.
And to be honest, he never let anything stand in his way.
No.
And
when he got an idea, he just stuck with it.
He was in with it, and that was it. So that's what I remember Jim for.
Yes.
You know, and the local radio is here today because of the efforts of the likes of Jim.
Oh, yes.
Fairness to him, yeah.
Continuing on the theme of Yall Communications Radio, Seamus Murphy, I'm going to bring you in here, Seamus. You have many, many fond memories of the late but great Jim Fitzgerald as well, haven't you?
I have. I have a lot of them, to be quite honest.
Yes. Because you were there at the very outset as well, weren't you?
I was, but my first contact with Jim was when we started off on the pilot days with Basti and all the gang.
Yes.
Back in 79, wasn't it?
79, yes.
And when Jim came in from Clashmore to present the West Waterford programme, and I had never known the guy before that, but I got to know him fairly quickly because we had there was kind of conflicts about who was doing sport and who wasn't doing sport. And,
at the time,
and,
yes.
And Jim was doing some great stuff. He'd interviews with John Kelly, and he'd interviews with John Tracy, whom I gather he pipped one time in a race, I'm told, as well.
I heard that.
So I'm told, anyway, that's the story that goes, and I'd believe it as well, because Jim used to do a bit of cross-country and a bit of running himself, and he was pretty, fairly good at it. But moving on then down through the years, it was pretty much when we closed down in December 88, we had to do then, because they were after putting the squeeze on the Pirates at that stage, and we weren't left with too many options. It was from there then that Jim really came into the fore, because there was a gap of about 7 years between the close down and
the reissuing of the license,
the present license, if you like. And we were doing a lot of toing and froing and going back and forth, following this guy and following that guy. And we were getting a bit frustrated that nothing was happening. And the aforementioned politician that Michael T mentioned was the man that introduced the legislation for to bring in the radio, but he forgot to put the community part of it into it.
Yes.
And it was the bigger fish were started up first, like the Century Radio, and we all know what happened with that, and the bigger ones. But we were getting kind of frustrated. You might remember yourself, we kept the place open down the town, down a little bit further down, to see if we could keep contacts open. And it was from that era period then that Jim kind of came to the fore, because he was brilliant to drive something on. Like his favorite phrase was drive on.
Oh, drive on, you know, man! Drive on, man! That was his favorite.
And
yeah.
It was from there that he kind of kept us. Myself and yourself and Jim were driving on, trying to get. We were going here, meeting everyone. I remember he dragged me up to Cove one day to meet Albert Reynolds when he was Taoiseach, and just out of the blue, he came knocking on my door. Come on, Reynolds is in Cove. We'll go up and we'll meet him. And we did. He was opening the Heritage Centre in Cove at the time.
Yes.
And we went up to meet him, and we went up to Mallow another night to meet Mara Gagan Quinn. This was the kind of a guy he was. Anytime he found a politician anywhere nearby, knock on the door, get into the car, off we go, we'll chance around with this fella or that fella, you know, regardless of what they were.
He had great contacts, didn't he?
He had the contacts, yeah, yes. He did, you know, it reminds me of a story Michael T mentioned there about the corridors of Leinster House. We were up there one day, I think you might have been there the same day.
Yes.
And it was actually the day that the radio bill was being introduced, and we went up, we had a meeting with the aforementioned Ray Burke again, but this time it was in his office in Leinster House. And we went into the office, and he gave us the courtesy 2 or 3 minutes that most community groups would get around that time for a busy man. But one of the abiding memories I have of that particular time, it kind of emphasises the point about Jim's connections in the political world. We were heading up one of the corridors of Leinster House towards the viewing area, to the Dáil Chamber.
Yeah, the balcony kind of
thing.
Yeah, the balcony thing.
We were heading up the corridor towards that. And suddenly there was ushers coming down towards us, telling us to move aside. Apparently this was the standard procedure when somebody important was coming along. And who was coming along? Only the Bold Charlie himself with his entourage. And they're coming down after coming out of the chamber, heading, I suppose, whatever. And we stood in, of course, and the late Jackie Fahey was chairman of the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party at the time.
Yes.
And he was there in the group, in Charlie's group. And lo and behold, Charlie stopped where we were standing and acknowledged Jim by name and wished him well. And basically what he said to him, I hope you're being well looked after. I thought it was fascinating altogether.
Oh, yeah.
It was the most amazing thing.
But this is what I mean. He had unbelievable contacts.
Aside from the political side of it, he was also involved in a lot of stuff. I'm sure that, like, Paddy and other people from around that area would know more about this than I would. He was involved in community work as well, a lot of it that went unnoticed that a lot of people didn't know about. And on that particular day when we were up there, after coming out meeting Burke, Jim had two further meetings lined up on the same day. One was with an official from the Department of Education about an extension to a school, I think, in Clashmore or somewhere.
Yes.
And I thought it was fascinating. And, you know, he seized the opportunity to go away from the main purpose of our visit for to deal with issues that were concerning himself and the people across the way. I thought it was brilliant. But his driving enthusiasm was infectious, you know. It was just... It was just infectious, you know. You couldn't.
He left nothing standing easily.
No, absolutely nothing. There was no such thing as a problem. If it could be solved, it wasn't a problem.
He was the greatest man to dissect red tape that I ever saw.
Yeah, he was very good.
Absolutely,
he was very good. I'm sure all of us agree. When you go through life, you meet people that you're happy you met, and there are others you're probably not so happy, you know. But Jim would be in the former category. He's a person that we're all glad we met.
Yeah.
And I think everybody was, when we're going to the grave, I suppose we'd like to think we made a difference somewhere along the line.
Well, certainly.
For the better. Certainly Jim did.
Certainly Jim did.
And he made a big difference, because I don't believe the station would be here without... I know others played a part, but Jim was the driving force. When others like ourselves were despairing and saying, look... It doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, and we were one of the six, actually, at the time.
We were six. We were driving on, and Jim was driving it on. He kept driving us on, and I thought it was just hilarious. The night we completed the application was probably the highlight of the world for me. Yeah. 4 o'clock in the morning, below in above the spinning wheel, we were still walking feverishly with cups of tea and cakes all around us, trying to get the application finished. And we got it finished at about 4 o'clock and had to get it to the printer then and get it printed and get it up to Dublin by courier to arrive by 5 o'clock at the IRCC headquarters. And we were told afterwards it arrived at 10 to 5, which wasn't too bad.
He made it anyway.
He was unbelievable, you know, and I can picture him now pacing up and down the room below half 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And here was I writing feverishly, writing feverishly, and next thing you get a shout, no, change that. You're loving it again and away. But that's the way he was. He'd be sadly missed, not alone by a lot of the people coming into the station at the moment probably would never have heard of Jim Fitzgerald and would never know who Jim Fitzgerald was. And I think there's only right to remind them
that this wouldn't be here
if it wasn't for Jim. They wouldn't be coming in here. They wouldn't be here.
Well, one new humorous story, actually, that I have with Jim, I think it was back in the pirate days. I think it was one of our first outside broadcasts over in Ardmore. Over in Ardmore.
I had a small
mini van with the CRY logos and all that. And I think that we set up the gear anyway. We're about going away a grand anyway. And of course, a lot of the gear was in the van, the whole lot. And for some strange reason, I think I got an ESP call or something like that here in Yall at the time. So I said to Jim, do you know anyone coming into town at all? Or could I get a lift into town? And Jim said, no problem. He says, take the car. So I hopped into his car anyway. And off I went. And heading out onto the N25 from Ardmore. Foot in the brake, no brakes. No brakes at all. Cheapest. Crept into town, did me business anyway, and came out. And of course, Jim said, How'd you get on? I got on grand, Jim. But I said, a small problem. I said, tell the truth. You know, I said, I was just coming up to Ardmore Cross. He says, and the brakes failed. This isn't the car. Not at all. He says, I've gone for the last 6 months. I forgot to tell you. See, pull the handbrake, you know. But that's the kind of man he was. He let nothing stand in his way.
No, nothing stand in his way. He's definitely unique, that's for sure.
And talking, of course, about, we mustn't forget his contribution to the Happy Man Festival. Oh, Paddy O'Brien, I want to bring you in here, Paddy, because you knew Jim Fitzgerald for the longest time, didn't you?
Absolutely, and I was very, very proud and happy to call Jim Fitzgerald my friend. And, you know, looking back, I suppose, certainly I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for the great help and support from Jim Fitzgerald. Many, many years ago, I was singing, just doing the local scene and singing a few songs here and there with a band called The Strangers.
I remember them, yes. Yes.
Bless, because why we named The Strangers, well, that's exactly what we were at the time to the scene. We were strangers. So Jim came to me one day and he said, you're going recording. And I said, I'm not comfortable about going recording, so I have no songs. And you said, learning songs now. He said, you have a number of songs you're already doing in the show, so it's all arranged, you're going recording. So he said, I'll be up to you Monday night, and off we'll go. So Monday night, my heart was pounding, because, you know, I'd be very nervous about the fact of going into a recording studio, something I would never have done. But he locked me up to Brian O'Reilly's Fiona Studios in Fife.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I stopped. I said, is this arranged? I said, well, you know, get out. He said, get out. Just go.
Yeah.
So I went in anyway, and the rest was history, of course, with regard to the recording.
Yes.
But the following year, then he said, you have to follow it up now with the second cassette, which was, the first one was Easy Listening Memories,
yes.
And then the third year with Favourites. But in between times, of course, he was always telling me where to send a promotion, and
yes.
The lads were just saying it was the pirate radios at the time.
Yes.
And of course, I must add that they did so much great work. The local radio system generally,
yes.
At that particular time, relaunched so many people within the, launched and relaunched, I would say, so many names within country and Irish music across the board.
Well, of course, I suppose you have a point there, Paddy, because I suppose only for the local radio and indeed the community radio, a lot of artists wouldn't get the airplay.
It was absolutely, it wasn't there, it wasn't happening at that time.
Mm.
And, you know, Jim was pushing for this and to get the full, you know, length and breadth of the country to get my stuff out to the various stations that were up and running at the time. But then, you know, further on, of course, he would have started off the approach to RTE TV.
Mm.
And I was going to Holland at the time, representing Ireland in what I suppose you could call it the Eurovision of country music. It was the,
yes.
Gold Star Award.
The Gold Star Award, yes.
And I was lucky enough to get through in Ireland and represent Ireland in Tilburg in Holland. And about a fortnight before I was heading off, Jim said, we'll have to get RTE to cover this. And now, what are the chances of anybody
absolutely
getting RTE
nil at the time.
To cover
nil
this?
At the nil. Time, yeah.
And I just listened, because I was after learning one thing with Jim Fitzgerald, you listened and you did what you were told.
Yes.
And you know, things generally worked out exactly as he had planned.
Yes.
So that was the way. So I left it to Jim, and the next thing, maybe 2 days later, he arrived up at my house and he said, there'll be two cameramen and Theresa Mannion, who the girl, of course, at the moment is in the thing with the weather. Theresa Mannion, he said, will be here, he said, to do a segment for the 6-1 news. Now, I mean, what are the chances?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So Theresa Mannion did come with two cameramen and they stayed for 2.5 days. They actually followed the band to Gortonbridge. We're playing Glenview Lounge in Gortonbridge. They did some footage there and it featured on the 6 o'clock news. Country star heading to whatever.
That amazing.
Whatever.
Absolutely amazing.
You know,
yeah.
After that, I said, well, you know something, I don't have to worry anymore about something not happening. It's a case of just wait and be told, what is happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But with regard, again, of course, with regard to travelling further afield, then, of course, the thing was the only person, I suppose, in RTE, to be fair, that was helping country music was Pascal Mooney, who
yes.
later, of course, became involved and in politics as well. But Jim approached Pascal. We went off to Tramore one night. Pascal Mooney used to do road shows called the Country Road Shows.
Mm.
And we went one night and it was pouring rain. And of course, in those days, crowds were much bigger and there was more people probably getting out to the venues and so on and so forth. And we couldn't get in. So Jim was coming back up the road and there was no word spoken until we were just about maybe 2 or 3 miles. And he turned to me and he said, be ready at 6 o'clock next Tuesday. I said, what's happening? There's another show here. But I said, sure, the doors won't open late. We won't get caught again, is it? So 6 o'clock the following week, off we went, and we were planted well below waiting until Pascal Mooney arrived at the venue.
Mm.
And Jim, when Jim's approach to Pascal Mooney was, hello, he said, my name is Jim Fitzgerald from Clashmore, he said. And he said, this is Paddy O'Brien, blah, 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 and so on. And he said, I have a cassette tape here, he said. And he said, I would suggest, he said, if at all you get a chance, he said, to listen to it, he said, I don't want you looking back in a few years' time being disappointed that you got the opportunity. And Pascal Mooney kind of looked at him, and he was kind of,
yeah.
Because I think the approach was like this.
Was a very direct approach.
Pascal kind of took notice. But he said, we can't play cassettes. Well, Chip said, I would like you to listen to it yourself. And again, the rest was history. Pascal took the cassette and we got the call about a week later that he was after transferring whatever it was he needed to do for RTE.
Yes.
And to some different type of school
Yeah.
or whatever like that. And that happened. So, you know, that was the way, like, and then, of course, the weekends, the music weekends. Jim, like, was, I think you could safely say that Jim was so far ahead of his time.
Yes.
He was so far ahead in ideas. His ideas were brilliant. They were, you know, I often said if we had a government of Jim Fitzgerald's, the country would be absolutely,
absolutely flying.
Absolutely
flying. Yeah. Because he was the kind of fella, he got things done. Because I remember going way, way back, I suppose, back into the 70s, I suppose, below in Villierstown. And there was Paddy O'Brien up in a low loader, strumming a guitar away. And Jim turns to me and he says, "See that lad?" He says, "He got places. He got places." He says, "He got places." And he did.
Oh, and he made sure.
And he made sure.
And as I said, you know, that's why I said I am very proud to have had Jim Fitzgerald as a friend and very proud to have known him as a person and as a person I could have spoken to and discussed, because I found no matter what I ever discussed with Jim, I would always get a very logical answer, a good explanation, and everything would be broken down and it would always work out well.
Mm.
So I will forever be grateful and indebted to Jim Fitzgerald for what he did for me, and indeed what he did for music generally. I mean, as you mentioned earlier on, the lads were saying about, you know, that he wearing the many hats. The Happy Man Festival, of course, was one.
Was another one over.
And
yeah.
Indeed others. Mm. And the amount of people, bands that he would have started off at the time. He got young bands into youth clubs around the country, and even John Kenny from The Unbelievables, the amount of work he would have got for John Kenny at the time.
Mm.
John Kenny would be only, he wasn't the part of the duo at the time, he was on his own and started. Mm. And then Gimmick was...
Gimmick was another one, yeah.
And you know, like, the amount of people, and I mean, the amount of people away from the business completely that Jim Fitzgerald would have advised and helped in various ways, I would say would be absolutely enormous. Mm. His contribution to people, his contribution to society, his contribution to the community, to young people getting involved in sports and everything like that, his contribution was just absolutely enormous, and his likes will never pass this way again.
Certainly, well said, Paddy. And indeed, as well as that, he was a very, very charitable man as well.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And we all know that, Drake, you know, we all know that. Ollie Mack, I want to turn to you there, because Ollie, you have many, many fond memories of the late great Jim Fitzgerald, haven't you?
I have, Noel. Unlike Paddy O'Brien, I didn't have to go into the studio and record and just try a few CDs.
Yeah. You, of course, you were coming from the, you're talking about the spinning wheel days, I suppose. And
Father Mack, Snoopers would be the start.
Snoopers, I suppose, yeah.
Snoopers would be the start. The first time I met him, I remember so well, was Minnie Regan, kind of winding down a bit that time.
Yes.
And there was this guy sitting over the corner watching the disco for a while. And she said, "You know that fellow over there?" I said, "I don't, Minnie, no. That's the Happy Man." I said to him, I said, "Jesus, he don't look very happy to me anyway." You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that was it. It started from there. We went to Snoopers. He said, "You're coming with me," he says. And that's where the DJ Ali thing came from.
Yeah.
I don't know, thank him for that or that, but
yeah.
It's grand when you're 16, 17, young fella, but that's where I came from. But anyway, that was Jim, and he never kind of flaunted that. And I remember the one thing sticks with me as well was the Car. The Fiat Mirafiori.
I remember it, yeah. Right? I remember it, yeah.
According to Jim, to the Fiat Mirafiori. See? That was
and that with no brakes, it was like a Ferrari.
Fiat,
you know,
Mirafiori, that was it, like. And, Snoopers started 1990, I'm not great with the years though. 1990, I can remember the whole, they were hanging off the ceilings inside that pub that night. I can remember it.
Like, he had, when it came to things like that, when it came to, we'd say, efforts like that, and indeed the projects that he took on, he had the Midas touch.
Yeah, and he kept that.
He was unbelievable that way. Like, he could really make something out of nothing, couldn't he?
Yeah, and I remember he said to me in 1980, he said, "We're going to the ocean," he says. "I'm going to the ocean. You come with me." I tell you, looking for money, like, "Do I have or something?" I said, "I have the bad boy. You're on your own." "No, no," he says. "I sort out that side of it," he says. "You'll come with me." So from there to this, been a while. He did two pubs going at one time. You know, many members.
That's right. He did change over between one and the other. Yeah,
one
time. Yeah.
And also, he employed a lot of people. Like, people forget that, you know.
Yeah.
Between that and the Hilltop, and you know, the Hilltop then was the next move. And that was kind of...
And he, I tell you, he always looked after his own, because I know on the Hilltop he did an awful lot of West Waterford people in.
Yes.
You know, he gave huge employment from that point of view, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Between the Hilltop now and he did two pubs going. I mean, look at the street, you know, there's two or three pubs closed down. If Sinn Féin was around,
they'd be humming.
Certainly wouldn't be.
They'd be humming.
Certainly wouldn't be anything,
you know? Okay, lads, what we're going to do now, we're going to take a commercial break and we'll be back directly after that. In case you've just joined us here, we're paying a special tribute on the radio this morning to the late but great Jim Fitzgerald. And it's probably already gathered. There's so many stories, so many anecdotes can be told about Jim Fitzgerald. But as I said, we'll be back directly after this short commercial break. This morning, we're paying special tribute there to a man that went from our midst there last Saturday there, and the 9th of September there. Jim, of course, died there. Jim Fitzgerald, we're talking about there, passed on there. And of course, Jim suffered from the motor neuron disease there for about maybe about 10, 12 years there. But as I said, he was really a fighter. He really battled it on. Bertie Murphy is with the studio. Of course, I'm joined, as I said, there with the lads here. Of course, I'm joined with Seamus Murphy, former chairman of Community Radio, y'all, Michael T. Murphy, and Bertie Murphy, all Murphys, and of course, Ali and Paddy O'Brien as well. Bertie, I want to turn to you because you were got to know Jim Fitzgerald, of course, from the karaoke, because you were stuck on the karaoke, wasn't you?
Yes, Jim. Noel, but before that, I knew Jim since 1971.
Yes.
He was working in Michael Murray's as an apprentice.
Yes, that's
and
correct.
And we'd be all down the Scout Hall taking a break from our studies and kicking a football around.
Yes.
And Jim would be finishing work and we'd be going home to our tea. And I remember Jim, and he wouldn't say anything to us, but there was just a big, huge smile in his face.
Yes.
Walking up Brown Street.
Yes.
To get his lift back to Clashmore.
Yes.
But then John Tracy came on the scene, and there was a great link. Jim, as I said, he wanted to put the interest of radio into the young people, and he'd come in of a Saturday morning for the West Waterford programme.
Mm.
And there'd be hands and legs hanging out the windows. He'd get as many into the car as possible to bring them in.
Oh, yeah, there'd be about 20 people inside the car, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we'd around the houses race then as well, and he'd get all the lads from West Waterford, like Tony Ryan and Michael Veal from Dungarvan Athletic Club. And we built up a relationship that way through athletics. And then John Tracy came on the scene, and he won the World Cross Country Championship in Scotland, the first one, and the second one was in Paris. No, I forget the name of the venue now, but he was going for he got two anyway. And
yes.
Then the third one he went for in Paris, and he got beaten there.
Yes.
Into about 37th position, John Tracy did. But he organised, we were all fascinated with being so close and having someone who knew John Tracy
who knew
so
John
well.
Yeah, that was it, like. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Jim organised a meeting, a kind of an audition,
yes,
with John Tracy out in his house in Fillerstown, just below the Cruise Green Lawn.
Mm.
And we all arrived there, and about two Carlos was there. And we were there, and we were really, it was like meeting Elvis, really, you know. We held him so high in our esteem. And like John used, as a young fella of 12, he used to run from Villastown to Cabraquin to school. And like, he's now national, he's chairman of the Sports Council of Ireland.
Mm.
So they were my first memories of Jim. And then after that then, we got into the pilot station, started up in 79. So there was a period where I'd meet Jim here and there and all that kind of crack, like, you know. But
yeah, being involved in the radio,
we had nothing
yeah.
particularly in common except the athletics. But he'd always have the West Waterford team running in a race in Yall.
Mm.
So that was my first memories of Jim. And then, of course, we had the starting off the pilots. And he sucked that in mad. He's mad about that. And
it gave the likes of Jim, I suppose, an outlet, a great outlet as well.
But people in Yall Town then got to know different areas in West Waterford.
Yes.
Like Knockaneras. Where's that?
Yeah.
Where's Summer Hill?
Exactly. Places like,
like that.
Where's Pulla? These
kind
of things.
Pulla
like,
and all these things.
Yeah.
And he gave us a knowledge of all these places, which I have a fair idea now. I totally know the boundaries.
Yeah.
But I got to know West Waterford an awful lot through Jim.
Well, I suppose what few people don't realise, actually, that Jim actually was the... Jim Fitzgerald, when he was involved in the radio way back, and back, as Seamus said there, in 1995, Jim was the instigator of the Rural Report programme and here in that we're doing every Saturday morning here in Community Radio at all. And Jim came up with an idea. He said, look, he says, it'd be great to get different reports every morning, he says, from different areas.
That's right.
You know? And he said, look, he says, I'll talk to Kevin, the late Kevin Gallagher outside in Ardmore, he says. I'll get him in, he says, and we'll go from there. And I think he did it for about 2 or 3 weeks, and he turned to me and he says, would you do it, he says. I said, I don't know, Jim. Chance it for a week or so anyway. Chance it. Yeah. That's how he'd be. Chance it. Like, he'd push an idea in it. Like, yeah. And he'd convince you that the idea was absolutely brilliant. And indeed, it is absolutely brilliant because the programme is running non-stop since 1996.
It is indeed. But he was working away behind the scenes, and which he was doing work which none of us knew anything about.
Yes.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
He was just a presenter and a producer of the Rural Report, and we thought that was it.
And
but when I listened to Michael T and Paddy and Seamus and Ali there, he was, you know, he was always working.
And he was a man of action, because I often saw him actually on the radio, and he'd be presenting the programme on the radio, and the hands would be going. If you stood beside him, you get a belt of a fist.
That's,
you know?
Right, yeah. He lived it with his body.
He actually lived it. You're right, actually. He actually lived the programme with his body. Seamus, I want to go back to you, because I said, again, time is of the essence here, and I suppose, as I say, we'll have to wrap up the programme in a couple of moments' time there. But I suppose, getting back to you, Seamus, there, he was one of the major instigators, and you made a very valid, very valid point there a little bit earlier on, to say that only for the work that Jim Fitzgerald put into the radio, we wouldn't be here now.
No, we wouldn't. Jim had connections that nobody knew about, you know. He opened doors that you and I wouldn't have been able to open when the three of us were trying to put this package together. And those doors that he opened were vital to get us into places where we wouldn't otherwise have gotten, you know.
Yes.
The day we went up, I think Michael was mentioned it frequently, or recently there, we went up to the hearing and juries.
Yes.
And so Jim just went in, he was shaking hands with people that I hadn't a notion
who they were.
But those were people that he was after being in touch with and constantly in contact with throughout the period. But it was 95 when we opened in September was probably the most difficult period for all of us, because, you know, you're aware yourself, the teething problems that we had.
Oh, yes.
We were grand as pilots, because there was nobody breathing down
there
our
neck. There was no constraints, no restraints.
It was free and easy, and everybody was happy in what they're doing. But then suddenly we had all these civil servants from
the
various areas, and you were getting
phone
calls every day and emails and meetings here, there and everywhere to account for what you were doing. And on top of all that then, you had to deal with a wide traverse of people, you know, within the station as well, all with problems cropping up every day. I remember at the time I was working full time, the same as yourself, and it wouldn't be unusual to be called out of work, you know. And but behind all of that then, Jim was there driving it on and smoothing out the little humps. And any time we had problems, you know, we'd meet every week, and we'd bump into each other every day. But we'd meet every week then to go over this, that, and the other, and we might mention, look, such a thing is a bit of a problem. To be grand, drive on.
Oh, that was it. That was his motto.
Drive
on, man.
There was no hump, but it was smoother. But again, I'd have to reiterate that without him, this station wouldn't be here. It's as simple as that.
And that's exactly one of the main reasons why we're paying tribute to the man himself this morning. Michael T, you want to come in there a second?
Just to mention, Jim never sought thanks or praise for all his success and all the good that he did for the community. Mm. But you could see that he enjoyed the success, and he had this kind of an infectious laugh and a grin that you would have to laugh at him too.
Yes.
And he'd fly his hands around the place. He'd don't mind drive on.
Oh, that was his
next item, next project. If I might make a suggestion for CRY, you should have a mural or a portrait of Jim in one of the walls here. So when people do have your visitors here, and they'll say, well, who's your man? And they say, you keep him in our thoughts all the time in the radio station, because
Jim Fitzgerald
and CRY are synonymous.
They're synonymous. Yeah.
Yes,
so it's been noted.
Absolutely.
It's been noted.
We're all down the spin wheel. We all used to hang around the spin wheel, didn't we?
Yes.
And remember, Jim comes over and says, come on, lads, we're going out to take over the hilltop.
We all thought he was going off his game or something.
Yeah, he did.
But it's a fact. We all arrived.
I want to get you in there a second.
Just for a second, I know you're under pressure now. I know, do we mention to your listeners out there what he died of, more than Oran?
I did, I mentioned that.
We mentioned that, maybe we did. Oh, yeah. But just a couple of things there I wanted to say, that I've been visiting him probably 2 or 3 times a year.
Yes.
And he's the same, Jim. Even though, you know, he couldn't turn his head at some stages, but he was the same, the smirk and the character and the messing.
Yes.
You know? But just hopefully we can do something. Paddy O'Brien is there beside me. Hopefully we'll be able to do something 60s disco in the band maybe.
Oh, yes.
Sometime.
A good idea.
Does anybody out there listen? Also, Helen and Pauline and all the gang, what I've seen out there, the way they looked after that man, Paddy O'Brien knows this more than I do.
Yes.
They were unbelievable.
Absolutely. Because the care he got from Pauline, in fairness, was second to none. And to be quite fair, we have to acknowledge Pauline, because without Pauline's help, Jim wouldn't have...
Unbelievable.
He'd have went a long, long time ago. Paddy, I want to let the last word to you, because, as I said there, we were talking, of course, his nickname was Titch, or the Happy Man, wasn't it?
Well, a happy man, yes, indeed. But, you know, I suppose if you look at the various advertising media now, you'll see so many country music weekends happening all over the country and beyond. Well, Jim would be one of the people that started all this. Jim and myself sat down many, many years ago, plus 24, 25 years ago, and we discussed maybe doing, rather than, you know, doing individual nights, having a weekend and giving people the full package of having meals and entertainment and so on.
Yes.
So it all started from that. And, you know, when he was involved, things happened and bands were booked and everything happened and everything went smoothly. Again, as I said, you know, he had a wonderful imagination with regard to coming up with new ideas, and the best part of coming up with new ideas, he was able to deliver.
Yeah, he was a man, as you said there, ahead of his time. We had a note in here that said that we, the country music fans, have many, many great memories of the late Jim Fitzgerald for all the great music he brought to the Hilltop and indeed to the Spinning Wheel, the Happy Man Festival in Clashmore. Rest in peace, Jim. Incidentally, our telephone lines are open there, folks. 91199 92288. We're paying a special tribute there to the man himself, the late Jim Fitzgerald there of Ballyheeny in Clashmore. Jim, folks, I know we're going to have to end, because as I said originally we have this program, I think, from 10 until a quarter to 11, so time is running out. Barty, we'll have the last word.
I'll never forget, and Ali will be there as well. The whole town was there, actually. Holy Thursday 1991.
Yes.
Jim brought up a guy from Waterford in a big, fine jacket on him, and he had a karaoke show. And the whole town was there, Ali. Remember that night?
Yes.
And we all wanted to see what was this karaoke all about and how did it work. So the whole place was full, Jim brought karaoke. Anything that knew that was in the market.
And you're right. Any new developments he was into. Yeah. He was into, you know.
I'm still at it.
Okay, on that point, I said that we have to have end our little discussion. Can I thank the guests in the studio this morning? Of course, Barty Murphy, very thanks to you for coming in. Ollie Mack, thank you for coming in and sharing your memories. Seamus Murphy, thanks very much for coming in. Paddy O'Brien, thank you very much for coming in. And Michael T. Murphy. I suppose to be only appropriate, I suppose, to end with Cathal Dunne's Happy Man. And indeed, this morning, Jim, as I said there, if you're listening to us above there, you'll be mighty pleased, I think. And the first thing you'll be saying is, drive on, man, drive on, man, drive on, man. Here's Cathal Dunne and The Happy Man. Cathal Dunn there from the year, I think, of 1979. That was our Eurovision entry there in 1979. And it epitomised the man that we were talking about there, Jim Fitzgerald there, the late Jim Fitzgerald there. He was known as the Happy Man. And indeed, he'd crossed, it was a festival named after there. Right? Eileen Linehan and friend rang in to say that they went to the Hilltop for Sonny Knowles. But unfortunately, the concert was cancelled. But Jim, the gentleman that he was, gave him a drink and got a taxi to bring him home. Yes, that would be Jim Fitzgerald, all right, like, tell the truth, it would be. Who else rang in there? Jim Nicholson rang in that said he must really enjoy the programme. Thanks for your comments there, Jim. If anybody else wants to comment there, do make a comment there, because this morning, as I said there, we're remembering a friend, a great friend to us there that passed on, you know. And as you say, we are very fortunate, folks, in our midst, to tell the truth, to have the likes of Jim Fitzgerald, had the likes of Jim Fitzgerald in our midst. Because, you know, when you walk through the road of life, I suppose, these are the people that you remember, and these are the companions, and these are the companions that you meet, and the companions that you had. And indeed, we're mighty, mighty grateful, Jim, for, as I said, the pleasure and indeed your companionship that you gave us down through the years.